Blog Talk Radio. Broadcasting.
To the Dragon's Lair on Renegade Broadcasting, the best source for factual information on the planet. Well, today I thought I would create a new religion. I think I'm going to call this new religion of mine Factual Information. And I want this information displayed everywhere in public view. I want it in schools where people can pray to it. I want it on all government buildings so people can see it. I like this new religion, factual information. Anyway, tonight's show is going to be more about the hot topic of this last week, which was stupidanity, a.k.a. Christianity. And we're going to, of course, because of the time of year it is, I'm going to talk a little bit about Beltane and the Feast of Valborg, which is the day before Beltane. So anyway, for the record, and let me check in the chat to make sure I'm coming through here because of all the problems we've had in the past. I just want to see some input here. Everything okay in chat? Can they hear me? Okay. All right, we're good. Excellent. Okay. For the record, today is April 28th, 2013, on our screwed-up Christian calendar. The sun is at 8 degrees Taurus. I want to remind everybody, be sure and give a listen to all of our other hosts here on Renegade. Until further notice, we have Kyle on Mondays, Dana on Tuesdays, Lou is on Wednesdays, Mike is on Thursdays, our big gun. Siegfried is on Fridays, Roundtable is on Saturdays, and me, of course, on Sundays. I will not monitor the chat. As usual, I may glance at it during music breaks. And, of course, I'll be smoking and drinking where I'm sitting, so won't have very many interruptions, but, you know, just an occasional silence to cover up the coughing. I want to remind everybody we've got a chat over at RenegadeBroadcasting.com, and I believe we have a live feed tonight. And there's a chat over at RenegadeBroadcasting.jatango.com. And over at the social network, AlternativeSocial.com, we have the identical chat. And I want to remind everybody about NationalProtectionism.com. I don't think I need to say much about that anymore, but if you're new, go over there and check it out. Most of the people here who have been listening for a while know what it's all about. Get on board, become active. Again, I have no personal website or blog. Probably wouldn't have a life if I did. I don't think I'll be taking any calls tonight. And speaking of calls, after some of the calls we've gotten this last week, I'm not so sure how much I like the idea of taking calls. I don't really want my show to be the show that winds up getting us kicked off of Blog Talk. We'll see. We'll play that by ear in the future. And as you know, I mentioned on my last show, that would be the last astrology show that I'd be doing for at least a little while. That will hopefully also give everybody a chance to absorb everything that's been said. And also, too, I'd like to remind everybody on the last show that I did a little culled essay on some topics regarding the word Celtic, the New Age movement, the laws of karma, so-called threefold, tenfold, sevenfold, all that garbage, and some other stuff worth listening to right at the end. Anyway, if you want to contact me, my email address is magus_18@geocities.com. That is magus_18@geocities.com, which is GEOCITIES.com. If you want to be on my email list, send me an email that says subscribe. Otherwise, just write me. I can't guarantee I can answer all of the emails. Let's see here. Cat's somewhere around here. She's not here by me tonight. I don't know what's up with her. She's kind of acting a little weird here the past few days. So anyway, tonight's show, what I'm going to do is I'm going to discuss Beltane and the Feast of Valborg first. Those are short. They're traditional pagan holidays that has been part of our culture for ages and have been ripped off by the communists and the Christians. No surprise there. We'll discuss that in just a few minutes, and then we're going to get into the big topic, Christianity, afterwards. So I'm going to play one more song, and I got to do something with this dog that's bothering me here. Normally I put him on the back porch. I may have to do that again. We'll see. But anyway, I'm going to play one more song, and we'll come right back, and we'll get into these topics tonight. So let me scroll on here to find what I was going to play. Here we go. some AC/DC. Everywhere. I've got a long list of stuff here on a notepad, Some of it refers back to websites that I've got up. I've got a gazillion web pages up. And so there may be a little bit of time trying to find the page, you know, on these tabs I've got here. And so, but first again, I want to, like I said, I want to discuss Beltane first, because we have this holiday coming up on May 1st. Now, like I just mentioned, it was stolen by the communists. It's now May Day for communism. I guess this is some sort of celebration for their purportedly workers' paradise. And, of course, that tactic is common of Christianity. And, you know, if you've gone to the Black Sun website or heard when Lou was reading an article from there about communism and Christianity, you'll find that the same people are behind it. And so why should we expect the tactics to be any different between them? You know, they always cut the head off the original, put theirs up there, call it the original, prance around and say that everybody else is just a copycat, when nothing further could be the truth. So anyway, what I'm going to do tonight, I thought that last song that I just played would be appropriate for the holiday of Beltane. Now, Beltane is an ancient celebration of fertility. Fertility celebrations have their origins in ancient Mesopotamia. Orgies took place, along with feasting, to encourage the fertility of food animals and the abundance of crops for the coming year. Beltane is directly opposite Samhain, which is commonly referred to as Halloween, on the satanic calendar. And Samhain is a time of reaping, so Beltane is a time of planting. It is celebrated at the halfway point between spring and summer, just as Samhain is the halfway point between fall and winter. Beltane is also the celebration of the return of the sun, the planting of crops, and the rebirth of spring. In ancient Mesopotamia, this fertility rite was known as Zagmuku. I think I'm saying that right, but I have no way of knowing. Zagmuku was celebrated at the first new moon after the spring equinox. Because the holiday focused on rebirth, the original creation epic known as the Enuma Elish was recited on the fourth day of the festival, which lasted 12 days. Originally, the celebration was in honor of the Sumerian god Enlil, or Baal, B-A-A-L, and this is where the name Beltane originates. In Mesopotamia, the New Year's festival also served to reaffirm the bond between the community and the gods. The community was represented by the king and temple ritual, for the king was the one responsible for the continual tending of earthly harmony and was held accountable to the gods. The king would join the high priestess in the inner sanctum of a ziggurat, where they performed ritual sex. The satanic year is based upon the natural cycle. The eight major sabbats are the equinoxes and solstices of the sun's year, and the four cross-quarter days that come between them. The four equinoxes and solstices are based upon the motion of the sun. The equinoxes are at the center of the sun's movement, and the solstices are the endpoints of the movement. These four solar points are cosmic events based upon the movements of the earth and sun, symbolizing the interaction of light and darkness. This date has long been considered a power point in the zodiac and is symbolized by the bull, one of the tetramorph figures featured on the tarot cards in the fixed signs of the zodiac, the world, and the wheel of fortune. The three other symbols are the lion, the eagle, and the spirit. These are also seen in the Egyptian Sphinx. Astrologers know these four figures as the symbols of the four fixed signs of the zodiac: Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. And these naturally align with the four great sabbats of witchcraft. Again, Beltane is the midpoint between the vernal equinox and summer solstice. Due to the alignment of the earth at this important time, telepathic communication with the gods and spirit world is very open. This is an excellent time to conduct a ritual, to communicate with demons who are the Gentile gods. If you've listened to any of my presentations in the past, you will know what I'm talking about, and I will discuss those presentations in just a few minutes. Beltane begins at sundown on the eve of April 30th. This custom originates with the Celts who always calculated their days from sundown to sundown. Sundown was the time when the druid priests lit the Baal fires on the tops of the hills. Beltane fires symbolized the spark of life and fertility. Traditionally, the Beltane fires were composed of wood taken from 9 different types of trees and kindled on a specially prepared sacred grid. The grid was created by outlining a square on the ground and dividing it into 8 smaller squares. Turf from the 8 outer squares was dug out and removed, leaving the 9th square in the center intact. The Beltane fire symbolized the central hearth of the community. These local sacred hearths represent the mystic divine fire at the center of all things, whose spark of life is carried by each of us. The Eve of Beltane has been traditionally been celebrated in the nude with orgiastic sex. Couples would pair off, jump through the flames of the bonfires, and go into the woods until dawn, engaging in all-night sex after intense feasting. And of course, just FYI, wearing clothes or ritual robes is a little bit too dangerous when you're trying to jump through the flames of a fire. Frequently, cattle were driven between two such bonfires. Oak wood was the favorite fuel for them. The following morning, they were taken to their summer pastures. Celebrants danced nude around the maypole. The maypole is derived from the Egyptian obelisk and represents the erect phallus, or the penis. It is traditionally constructed from wood of the birch tree, the tree of purification. And I'll have a little bit more to say on the maypole shortly. In the words of witchcraft writers Janet and Stuart Farrar, the Beltane celebration was principally a time of unashamed, natural and normal human sexuality and fertility. Such associations include the obvious phallic symbolism of the maypole and riding the hobby horse. Even a seemingly innocent children's nursery rhyme, "Ride a cock horse to Banbury Cross," retains such memories. And the next line, "To see a fine lady on a white horse," is a reference to the annual ride of Lady Godiva through Coventry. Every year for nearly 3 centuries, a sky-clad or nude village maiden elected May Queen of the May, also known as the May Queen, enacted this pagan rite until the Puritans put an end to the custom. Other May Day customs include walking the boundaries of one's property, repairing fences and boundary markers, performing chimney sweeps, participating in archery tournaments, dancing, feasting, music, drinking, in general, overall indulgence, things that are normally called sin by Christians. In ancient Egypt, the spring fertility festival celebrated the season of Het Hur and was known as the Festival of the Joyous Union. The energy of the earth sign of Taurus represents fertility and the commencement of the growing season. The union of the sun and the moon symbolized the fusion of the male being solar with the female being lunar, the new moon. The ancient Egyptians celebrated this holiday with art, music, dance, performance, and sexual intercourse. Now, the Feast of Walburg, which is normally celebrated on the eve of Beltane, and a lot of the traditions I've just mentioned, thought I'd mention something here. It's commonly referred to as Walpurgis Nacht, now, or Walpurgis Night, Walpurgis Nacht being German. Now, Walpurgis is the name of a Christian saint. As Satanists, we avoid using this terminology. I used it the other night because I was talking to a Christian, and of course they still didn't even know what I was talking about. So anyway, I just thought I would mention that fact. The common term that we would use would be called the Feast of Walburg. Years later, Sabbats were held on the summit of the Brocken and the Harz mountains of Germany. A black mass feasting and orgies lasted until dawn, with dancing around a huge bonfire and intense celebrating. The Feast of Walburg is a celebration of fertility like Beltane, that has its origins with the Vikings. The festival spread throughout Europe. At this time, the veil between the earth and the astral or spirit worlds is said to be very thin. What is done on this night, especially near midnight between April 30th and May 1st, has special significance. All rituals, magic, spirit communications, and related are much more powerful at this sacred night. Now I'm going to discuss the Maypole a little bit. The Maypole also is attributed to phallus worship, and it's very symbolic of the Irminsul. And if you've heard what I've discussed before on the Norse mythology, the esoteric of it, well, then you will have the understanding of the Kundalini serpent. So anyway, a central figure in the conducting of Beltane festivities, as celebrated by neo-pagans and neo-pagan witches, as well as real Satanists, the Maypole is usually a fleshly cut oak, birch, elm, or fir tree. It may be any one of these trees, since they are all associated with fertility, and Beltane is a fertility festival celebrated on May's Eve, from which the Maypole receives its name. The Maypole is a phallic symbol associated with fertility. Trees have been worshipped as bearers of life since ancient times. They have constantly played a major part in pagan rituals to ensure the fertility of women, cattle, and crops. According to tradition, the cutting of the Maypole was always accompanied by such joyous celebration with dancing and singing. In earlier times, it was erected in the center of the village, but in modern times, it is usually placed in a cleared area or wherever the Sabbath celebration occurs. Customarily, the tree, after being stripped of its branches, is decorated with garlands of flowers and long ribbons which are attached to its crown. In celebration, ends of the ribbons are taken in hand by young men and women, alternatively, who dance around the tree in opposite directions, braiding the ribbons over and under while singing until the tree is wrapped in ribbons. The May rites are most common in the British Isles, Europe, Canada, and the United States. Various countries have different customs. In parts of France, only girls dance around the pole, while a boy wrapped in leaves, who is called Father May, is led around it. In Bavaria, the Maypole is erected in front of a tavern. A man called Valber was wrapped in straw, and he dances around it. Feasting follow the singing and dancing. While in Scandinavia, it is a tradition to set up many Maypoles at each house. The festivals are celebrated at midsummer instead of the beginning of May there. The poles are burned at year's end at the autumn Sabbath. Usually a new pole is cut and dressed again at the next Beltane festival. However, in olden times, villagers found it more convenient to retain a permanent Maypole and dress it anew each year. And as usual, those against what is natural and normal, the Puritans, frowned on the sexual aspects of the permanent Maypoles and destroyed them in many locations throughout England. Locally, where I live, near Brenham, Texas, which is about halfway between Houston and Austin, to this day, they still participate in this ritual at their annual German festival. Now, this is about fertility. I just want to make that clear. It is also a form of sympathetic magic. Most things in the occult and spirituality deal with issues of death, rebirth, transformation, regeneration, fertility, the body's bioelectric, sex, necromancy, which is contacting the dead, usually an ancestor, or some form of ancestor worship, and achieving apotheosis, or the Godhead, or the practice of the magnum opus, etc., etc. Of course, there is also magic and divination, but the latter aren't really related to the former in the minds of those stuck in enemy programming. Those whose minds are stuck there have negative attitudes or ideas about these things and are still deeply ingrained in them. The most common view is that they are perverted or homosexual. So if you, for example, if you read Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike without understanding this concept, you really don't know what for sure it is that's being discussed. Now, I recommend listening to the show that I did where I talked about Albert Pike and what was in Morals and Dogma that implied that he may have been homosexual. So anyway, one time I had had a discussion with a woman, you know, about, of course, you know, half the population is are women, right? So anyway, I'd be willing to bet that 98% of them are actually phallic worshippers. I recently talked to a woman who had given birth to her first child, and I told her, "Welcome to Godhood." She didn't have a clue what I was talking about. I had to kind of go into what it was that I meant, and she eventually seemed to somewhat understand what I was saying, but not really. She had no idea that the birth of her child was an act of God, herself being a God. Now, this is why your unalienable rights come from your Creator. Christians always say God, even though it isn't what is said in the document nor the meaning they think it has. You can't explain it to them either. They can never get it. It's over their fucking heads. However, tonight I will discuss this further. But first, before I get into this, and I'm going to try to play as little music as I have to tonight, I am going to play one more song and go to the restroom and get something to drink, get a cigarette lit, and I'll be back in just a few minutes. So let me play a song here real quick. This one I think will work.
I cannot afford
Okay, I'm back. And like I said, this is going to be disorganized, and I'm going to try to see if I can remember all of my thoughts when I wrote all this stuff down. And, you know, it was this was a chore putting this together, I'm not going to lie. And I spent pretty good while here just getting all pissed off about some of the crap that I heard this week. And so it really kind of set me off. And anyway, you know, one of my thoughts here on this issue of Christianity is it's a tool of the enemy, and it was imposed on us, and it's a lie. And the idea that some people think that they can use something that was a tool of the enemy imposed upon us and a lie as a way of saving us from the people who gave it to us is absolutely fucking moronic. What fool or idiot, and I don't care who I insult when I say that, would come up with this concept that they could even, how could they even fathom this? Duh. Fucking retards. Okay? I mean, that's just fucking ludicrous. So, with that said, I will proceed. And again, this really set me off this week. I'm not happy in the least about what I'm hearing. Of course, this is to be expected. I'm going to interject something here. This is part of my notes, but I think this is a good time to say it. You know, everybody knows, if they've listened to some of my shows, that I've been involved in this for a pretty good while, and I've been involved with the Joy of Satan for a fairly good while. Well, a couple of years ago, you know, I set out to try and wake up the patriotard community, and I worked on them for about a year and really got nowhere with them. And the reason I got nowhere with them was because of cognitive dissonance, okay? Cognitive dissonance. Make sure I'm saying that correctly. And I've got something I want to read on that as well. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the part about how I wound up over on listening to Oracle, but after I gave up on them, I moved towards the Truth Movement. And my goals when I started doing this was to either convert these people, subvert what the hell they were doing, or put them under. Well, I can't say I did it all by myself, but Oracle is under. And I will say this, that was my intention. Either I was going to convert them, or I was going to put them under. And like I said, I didn't do it by myself, but that wasn't part of my goal. So it happened. Okay, cognitive dissonance. Let me get over to that. Like I said, I got to scroll to find this crap. So here we go. It's a little brief article on cognitive dissonance. I'm going to give you an example here on what cognitive dissonance is. And this is what the hell we're dealing with. And at this point, you know, I'm not so sure at this point that the white race is even worth fucking saving, you know? I mean, when I hear the crap that I heard this week, you know, this is fucking retarded. And if this is a representation of our people, are we worth saving? So anyway, here we go. When people have invested a huge amount of their life into something and then receive a shocking piece of news that throws their beliefs into doubt, how do they respond? Some realize that their belief system is no longer tenable and take the brave step of abandoning it. They begin their search for something new. Others downplay the news and say that they always had doubts anyway, and this is just a new doubt to be added to the others. But the theory of cognitive dissonance makes an astonishing prediction that many people will reject the news entirely and actually redouble their faith in their belief system. In other words, the more their beliefs are challenged, the more they will reaffirm their beliefs. They will view with hatred the messenger who delivered the news and may conclude that that messenger was sent by Satan himself to tempt and corrupt them. Now, I'm going to use an example here. This is from the same article. I'm just trying to make it understood by you guys since you're not here to read it. This is Salman Rushdie's book about about Islam and the satanic verses. So anyway, Rushdie's book highlighted an old story that Muhammad, having had the Quran dictated to him by the angel Gabriel, had a later encounter with Gabriel in which additional Quranic verses were added. It soon became obvious that these new verses were incompatible with the earlier verses, and they were quickly removed from the Quran. The conclusion of Muslims was that Satan had taken the form of Gabriel in the later encounter and tried to corrupt Allah's sacred words by introducing new verses. So these forbidden verses became known as the satanic verses, and many Muslims attempted to pretend they never existed. If they did, then Muhammad is revealed as a flawed prophet who was duped by Satan, and if he was duped once, then why not twice? Why can't it be concluded that the whole of the Quran is satanic? Now you understand why Rushdie's book was so incendiary. He shone a light on the deadliest weakness of Islam, the fact that their great prophet was deceived by Satan. But if this satanic deception is true of Islam, then why not Christianity? And why not Judaism? And why would it not also be true of many conspiracy theories? How do you distinguish God's truth from Satan's? How do you know you are not suffering from an extreme cognitive dissonance reaction to bad news? Many conspiracy theorists refuse to accept their ideas have been conclusively refuted in many cases. Cognitive dissonance prevents them from acknowledging the truth. They have invested so much of their soul into their beliefs that it has actually become impossible for them to backtrack. They are permanently locked into lies and delusions. Do you believe that David Icke, Alex Jones, Henry Mackow, and others like him could ever admit their errors? Of course not. Now, of course, we know Alex Jones is a direct plant, and I think Henry Mackow is too. I don't know about Icke. Anything that does not fit their system is rejected and attributed to the cunning of their enemies. But what distinguishes this approach from madness? A lunatic in an asylum who thinks he's Napoleon will never agree that he's mad. He will always say his enemies are trying to deceive him. Would you ever accept that your beliefs have been completely refuted? And if you wouldn't, aren't you just the same as the mad Napoleons? Well, so anyway, let me get rid of that screen real quick. Now, something similar was said with Christianity, and if you go back to Babylon, where the origins of the of this mystery religion began, and some, I believe it's Semiramis, if I'm pronouncing that properly, Christians like to say that was a way of Satan trying to head off the coming of Jesus by creating a false one in advance. Just how fucking stupid is that? Okay. They will conjure up anything to continue to believe what it is that they want to believe. Now, before I forget, I'm going to cough real quick. Okay, now, if you've been paying any attention to me, I've made it clear that I've uploaded onto my personal Blog Talk account some past shows that I had done. Two of them with Mike Sledge, and an interview with Kyle, and then also another interview with Kyle on this topic of Satanism. And some of those have made it to the but to the Renegade website. And the ones that I have just uploaded to my personal account, I'm going to see if Kyle can link to those as well on the Renegade site. And if you have not heard those shows, you really should go ahead and listen to those so you understand where it is I'm coming from. And of course, if you've been following me for a while, you're probably already aware of them. But I just want to make the make it clear to the new people. There's been some information added that they may not have heard. And if they did not show up as programs here on Renegade and to begin with or recently, even though they appear in the lineup as if they may have been. So if you just click on my my face or my name on the Renegade page, it'll take you to my bio, and you will find those there. One is called The Subversion of Paganism and the Creation of Christianity. Another one is Satanism. The two that are not there yet are an interview with Kyle that was done on Oracle, and also another one that was a sequel to The Subversion of Paganism and the Creation of Christianity. That was also done with Mike Sledge. Let me relight this cigarette. Okay, now, let's see here. Got a lot of scrambled notes here. I'm going to kind of scratch these out as I go along. That way I don't get don't confuse myself, because I got a lot of stuff to try to interject here. Okay, before we go any further, Mike did a phenomenal show here last Thursday. And I wanted to mention, too, something about Martin Luther. And I won't say King. Martin Luther did a huge amount, if I remember correctly. I'm going by memory here, folks. I looked at this stuff 10, 12, 14 years ago, okay? If I remember correctly, Martin Luther did a lot of writing on the Talmud. And I'm not going to comment on what Mike's theories are. I'm going to reserve any comments or thoughts at a later point. And I don't really think he's wrong in any of his directions. I think he's actually fairly accurate there, if not correct. And on a good portion of them, 100%. Okay, the ones he has questions on himself, those are the only ones that might have any questions at all. But I think he's on the right track. And that's all I'm going to say for right now, because I'm not going to get into saying somebody's right, somebody's wrong on our show who's done some phenomenal research and is probably right. I have to look into it further myself, or I have to jog my memory, or I have to go back into my notes. And I'll give you one example here. Lou was asking me on one of his shows about a particular topic. It was a Zadokites back at the time of the Essenes, and I could not remember diddly squat about it. And I told him I would go back into my email and dig up some information, and it took me a little while, but I finally did, and dug it up and sent it to him. And by the way, he and I are going to collaborate on a little project, and at some point we'll announce when we're going to present it and what it is, but it's related to that. And it will also have to do with Christianity. And so anyway, with that said, all right, get out of here, dog. Sorry about that. Sometimes my dog likes to be a pest and wants attention. So anyway, I did not put him on the back porch, obviously. Let me scratch that out. Now, I made a comment on the Golden Dawn. Let me elaborate on that a little bit. Okay, Golden Dawn. First time I ever heard Golden Dawn. Where did that come from? That come from a secret society and a cult group going back to the beginning of the 20th century, maybe even the late 19th. And this is where the Aleister Crowley came out of. And it was the original occult group that he was involved with, if I remember correctly. And by the way, Crowley is not a Satanist. He abused the Gentile gods. He practiced thelema, which was sex magic. And that in and of itself does not make him a Satanist. And Israel Regarde will even tell you anyone who thinks Crowley is a Satanist is a fucking idiot. Okay? Now, so you have a group over there in Greece who have adopted the name Golden Dawn, which is an occult group who practice Hebrew sorcery. Interesting. Now, why did they choose this? I have no idea why they chose it. All right. It sounds good, maybe? Okay. I don't know. Now, sure, I hear they're Christian. Well, like if you followed me on Total Fascism's website, I made a comment there in response to that. And my beliefs are that if they're Christian, they're eventually going to go by the wayside. Someone's going to figure out Christianity is bullshit. They're going to start another group that's going to be even better. And Golden Dawn will be a thing of the past. Those are my thoughts on it. Sure, maybe they're doing some good things now. So be it. Let them continue in the meantime. Eventually, this is all going to come to a head, and they're going to figure it out, or some people in it are going to figure it out, and we'll get them straightened out at some point. Maybe they'll listen to our shows. It would be nice if they did. Someone sent me an email here suggesting I need to clarify Satan. All right. Apparently, somebody thinks that when I say something about Satan, I mean Christian Satan. All right, let me explain some things, and I talked about this in my Satanist show. All right, some Satanists think they're Satanists, call themselves Satanists, but they accept Jehovah and Jesus and the story of Satan in the Christian belief system. And so instead of adopting Jesus and Jehovah, they side with this particular Satan. Well, if Jesus and Jehovah are bullshit, then so is that Satan. Okay, that has nothing to do with any real Satan. Okay, the Jewish Satan is their adversary, which is truth. And the Gentiles represent truth and are their adversary. So you, dear Gentile, are Satan, whether you like it or not. Okay? So that's out of the way. Now, there's a video available on YouTube for people to watch called The Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers. It's about 3 hours long. It was done by a Christian. The guy really does not understand what it is that he is talking about when he's talking about the Founding Fathers and their hidden faith. However, he does prove very well the Founding Fathers were not Christian. Okay? He tries to connect their beliefs to the Illuminati, of course. Who else would he be doing it for? There we have some Jew money behind that crap. I generally think anything Christian that appears to oppose the anyone running this planet who are mostly Jews, it's financed by them. So anything that's Christian, and if you're promoting Christianity, unless you're just a simple simpleton who hasn't got a clue, then you're working for the enemy. And even if you are a simple simpleton and haven't got a clue, you're working for the enemy too. You just may not know it. So anyway, all of you Christians out there, you're not going to get a theocracy. You'll get it over my fucking dead body. Okay? You and your idiocracy and stupidanity and your Christian Taliban are not going to happen. It's real simple. People like me are not going to fucking let you. Okay? You got that? Do I have to repeat myself? All right. Now, you people are doing your damnedest to scare off anybody joining us. There's a lot of good people out there who would join us, but they see Christianity, and what the fuck do? They run. They don't want any part of this. They may have a good head on their shoulders, certainly one good enough to know that Christianity is bullshit, but they see you people, and you fucking scare them off. What is wrong with you people? You know, I understand our ancestors who had no access to a lot of books and the internet. And this may even go even up into the 80s, okay, as far as books go. And definitely the 90s and the early 2000s for the internet. They didn't have a way to verify whether the religion was valid or not. You know, everything written that was of any use had been pulled out of the libraries by the Jews. Jews went through all the fucking libraries and checked out every book that was valid on any subject or in any way would hinder their agenda. They checked them out, didn't return them, and paid the fucking fines, or didn't pay the fines at all, or they fucking stole them. And that includes public schools as well. Elementaries, intermediate schools or junior highs and high schools, universities, public libraries, etc. They had no way of knowing. They had every excuse not to question Christianity. However, in today's world, with the what remnant we have left of the Library of Alexandria, there's no excuse for you not validating what it is that you want to believe. Pull your head out of your fucking ass and learn, okay? Now, I hope I'm pissing a whole bunch of people off because I've been wanting to say a lot of this shit for a long time. I hope you can tell. And you just happen to be on the receiving end of it at the moment, all right? So, let me scratch this line out. Now, next thing related to that comes to the rewriting of history. Well, you Christians sure love rewriting history. You keep coming up with all this crap, saying, oh, the Founding Fathers were Christian. Never mind the real facts. You'll lie, cheat, deceive, anything to try and validate your fucking belief system, which is not even a fucking religion. And I'll get to that in just a second. So what I've got here next that I'm going to play is from this little two-minute clip that came from that video that I just talked about that could be found on YouTube. Let me get back to the studio webpage here. And this is on Thomas Jefferson All right, where'd it go? Here it is, Thomas Jefferson on Christianity. It's about a minute and a half. So I'm going to go ahead and play this and let you hear it.
As we have seen, Paine's Age of Reason was an age of anti-Christian sentiment, an age against the Bible and against the God who inspired it. Furthermore, Paine's good friend, Thomas Jefferson, far from trying to establish a Christian nation, said he hoped the gospel itself would be destroyed in the New World.
He compared the gospel to the ancient mystery religion of the ancient world. He said it was basically a spin-off of the ancient mystery religion. And he goes so far as to say that he hopes the gospel will be done away with in these United States of America.
In a letter to John Adams, Jefferson wrote, "And the day will come when the mystical generation of Jesus, by the Supreme Being as his father in the womb of a virgin, will be classed with the fable of the generation of Minerva in the brain of Jupiter. But we may hope that the dawn of reason and freedom of thought in these United States will do away with all this artificial scaffolding and restore to us the primitive and genuine doctrines."
How anybody could think that Jefferson wanted to set forth a Christian nation when he's hoping for the destruction of the gospel is beyond belief.
Interesting. Well, now, one more thing before I read something here to you. Let me get back to that particular page. There was a treaty, Avalon, here it is, right here. This is called the Treaty of Friendship between the United States of America and the Bay, B-E-Y, and subjects of Tripoli of Barbary. And this was part of the Barbary Treaties from 1786 to 1816. Treaty of Peace and Friendship signed at Tripoli, November 4th, 1796. In Article 11, the first sentence, Article 11, and this is on the Yale University website. Okay, just do a search engine and Treaty of Tripoli, and you'll figure it out. It's the Avalon Project on that website. Okay, quote, "As the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion." End of quote. All right, there we go. Now I can get rid of that webpage. Now, what I've got next here is written by an atheist. Actually, I don't know what's happened to her. I haven't kept up to it, but her name is Madeline Murray O'Hare, and she used to be based out of Austin, Texas. Seems like I remember she disappeared, and nobody has ever found her. I probably can presume that she was probably taken out of the picture by someone pushing Christianity. Whom that might that be? All right. All right, this is from a radio broadcast done on April 5th, 1975, from KTBC Radio, Austin, Texas. Freedom of Religion in Colonial America. All right, so we're going to talk about how these people seeking religious freedom wanted to find freedom of religion in this country, huh? And by the way, speaking of freedom of religion, before I go too far, something else I wanted to say. Let me pull my list up so I can scratch another item off. Back when we had Greg in New Jersey here, he did a show and I called in and threw out a whole bunch of responses to things he was talking about in his show. And he actually never responded to any of them. He just went into a feel-good mood for the second half of the hour, which was to be expected. The only thing he responded to was that he agreed with what I said on Nixon and gold. So anyway, Greg in New Jersey had made a comment about freedom of religion, and I had mentioned the fact in that show that freedom of religion was actually brought in first over in England as a way to try to get Catholics, or rather get a Catholic back onto the throne of England. So I thought I would mention that again because I don't know how many people here may have heard that show or even care to remember that show, considering that person is no longer with us. So anyway, This is Madeline Murray O'Hare, an American atheist. The religious community likes to remind us that our forefathers came here from Europe because they wanted the right to freedom of religion. Let's look at just that, freedom of religion. In respect to Sunday laws and church, did the colonists freely flock to church on Sunday, as we are given to believe, or not? Was the attendance at church coercive? Every Christian would immediately say that no one ever was forced to go to church in the United States. Well, let's look at that first law ever passed in the United States in respect to this. This is an early law in Virginia. The Honorable R.W. Thompson, Secretary of the Navy, in an address delivered in Washington on May 16, 1880, made the following statement concerning a law made before the organization of the regular assembly in 1619. The first statute passed by the Cavaliers of Virginia provided that he who did not attend church on Sunday should pay a fine of 2 pounds of tobacco. This was the first law ever enacted in the United States and was passed in 1617, 3 years before the Puritans landed at Plymouth. And if you remember the slavery show I did with Mike, I called the people at Plymouth, the Mayflower, as a bunch of religious nuts, and he actually elaborated on that pretty good in his last show. And so I won't go there too much, except to say that I will say this before I continue. A lot of times we like to hear about the people of Mayflower. The press is always talking about the people on Mayflower. Never mind the people of Virginia who were here first, almost 20 years before the people on the Mayflower. And when it's ever brought up that nobody discusses Virginia versus the Mayflower, it has something to do with the Civil War. Well, you know, since the South was for slavery and they lost and the North won, well, we'll talk about the Mayflower. We won't talk about Virginia. So, but, you know, anyway, and by the way, there were some settlements in Virginia that were not Christian, and I will hope to get into that at some point in the near future, when I try to discuss the New Atlantis and Francis Bacon. Okay, in 1623, a further law was passed, and I have the actual copy of that, and I'm reading still. One which reads, "Whosoever shall absent himself from divine service on Sunday without an allowed excuse shall forfeit a pound of tobacco, and he that absents himself for a month shall forfeit 50 pounds of tobacco." Statutes at Large of Virginia, 1619 through 1660, Volume 1, page 23, I have to call. In 1629, authorities were ordered to take care that the law was carefully executed, and by 1642, church wardens were bound to present to the civil authorities all cases of profaning God's name and His holy Sabbath. Gradually, the law began to prohibit activities other than that of attending church. By 1657, laws prohibiting traveling, loading of boats, shooting of game, so that there would be a better observance of the Sabbath, and fines were increased up to 100 pounds of tobacco. By 1705, all general acts of profanation, P-R-O-F-A-nation, of the Sabbath, by working, playing, drinking, being absent from the church for 1 month, were included in one class with a penalty of 5 shillings or 50 pounds of tobacco. In default of payment, the offender was subject to 10 lashes. The addition of these offenses as violations of the law meant that the first people did stay away from church, and second, they did enter into such profanations as either working or playing on the Sabbath. This was Virginia, where, obviously, one did not have freedom then of religion. One was required to attend church or pay a fine. What about the other colonies? In Plymouth, there was a rigid common law requiring observance of the Sabbath until June 10, 1650. At that time, the General Court enacted the following. Further be it enacted that whosoever shall profane the Lord's Day by doing any servile work or any such like abuses shall forfeit every such default 10 shillings or be whipped. The next year, the General Court made it explicit that it intended that people should be in church on Sunday. On June 6, 1651, the following was enacted. It is enacted by the court that whatsoever person or persons shall neglect the frequenting of the public worship of God, that is, according to God, everyone that is a master or dom of a family, or any person at their own disposing, to pay 10 shillings for each default. Plymouth Colony Records, Volume 11, page 57-58. Such non-attendance at church was deemed to be, in this enactment, contrary to God, the allowance of the government, intending to the subversion of religion and churches, or palpable profanation of God's holy ordinances. To make it even more clear, the law went further. Enacted by the court, that if any in any lazy, slothful, or profane way doth neglect to come to the public worship of God, shall forfeit for every such default 10 shillings or be publicly whipped. Again, same Plymouth Colony Records. By 1662, when it was found that people did not come to church but did go to public drinking houses, a Sunday excise law was passed which forbade the drawing of any wine or liquor on the Lord's Day, with a 10-shilling fine for every default. When the poor colonists were forced to go to church and went there, even as we do now in the year 1665, a law was enacted against sleeping in church. Anyone found offending was to be put in the stocks. By 1669, it was discovered that some people even smoked on Sundays. And this was forbidden by a 12-pence fine. Speaking of which, I want to light a stogie on Sunday. Hold on. There you go. You hear my lighter? Okay, there we have it. Okay. Now, where was I at? By 1670, the court was fuming that people continued to slothfully lurk at home. And orders were given to uncover them and identify them to the court. But let's move on to Massachusetts Bay Colony. On April 17, 1629, the first general letter from the governor and deputy of the company was issued. This required that all surcease their labor every Saturday through the year at 3 of the clock in the afternoon, and that they spend the rest of that day in catechizing in preparation for the Sabbath. Everyone was set for church or else. Among the answers of the reverend elders to certain questions propounded to them, we note the following on November 13, 1644. Remember the weather in Massachusetts in November and the need to keep warm there. The elders set forth as law. So any sin committed with a high hind, as the gathering of sticks on the Sabbath day, may be punished with death. Records of Massachusetts Bay, Volume 2, page 93. On the 4th of November, 1646, the General Court decreed that wheresoever in the ministry of the word is established, every person shall duly resort and attend thereunto, respectively unto the Lord's Day, and if any person within this jurisdiction shall, without just and necessary cause, withdraw himself from hearing the public ministry of the word, after due means of conviction used, he shall forfeit his absence from every such meeting 5 shillings. Same records of Massachusetts Bay. By 1653, the theocracy was fuming that still there was not sufficient observance of Sunday, and ruled against children playing in the streets and other places. Youths, maids, and other persons, both strangers and others, uncivilly walking the streets and fields, traveling from town to town, going on shipboard, frequenting common houses, and otherwise to misspend that precious time. Again, records of Massachusetts Bay. The first offense brought a reprimand. The second, a fine of 5 shillings. The third, 10 shillings. And further offenses, they shall be whipped by the constable. 5 stripes. Nothing can bring all the people into church, and the laws were more and more severe as time passed. Constables were given the right to go places where people drank or where Quakers might be meeting, and to break down the doors and arrest, according to the law, by 1667. In 1711, 12 hours imprisonment was added for profanation of Sunday. In the New Haven colony, the situation was the same. There, the matter of Sunday desecration came before a civil court in December 1647, and the legislation seemed to be demanded the same was passed. This merged into the New Haven Code, which came out with the enforcement of public worship. And it further ordered that wheresoever the ministry of the word is established within this jurisdiction, according to the order of the gospel, every person, according to the mind of God, shall duly resort. Just lost my spot. Sorry about that. According to the order of the gospel, every person, according to the mind of God, shall duly resort and attend thereunto upon the Lord's days, at least, and also upon days of public fasting or thanksgiving, ordered to be generally kept and observed. New Haven Colony Records, 1653 through 55. Now, what punishment was given to those who did not obey? But if the court, upon examination by clear and satisfying evidence, find that the sin was proudly, presumptuously, and with a high hand committed against the unknown command and authority of the blessed God, such a person therein, despising and reproaching the Lord, shall be put to death, that all others may fear and shun such provoking, rebellious courses. Here we are, and we talk about Muslims doing what? Okay, and in Connecticut, it is ordered and decreed by this court and authority thereof that wheresoever the ministry of the word is established according to the order of the gospel throughout this jurisdiction, every person shall duly resort and attend thereunto, respectively, upon the Lord's day and upon such fast days, etc. Public Records, Colony of Connecticut, prior to 1665, page 524. Now here, the fine was 5 shillings. By May 1684, it was ordered that selectmen, constables, and grand jurymen should promote due and full attendance. All work or play on land or water was prohibited. All traveling was forbidden except for church attendance. Playing and talking was forbidden, as was staying outside of the meeting house, there being a room inside, of course. Loitering, anything was punishable by fines. In New York, fines were used for traveling, working, laboring, shooting, fishing, sporting, playing. And someone might as well go to church. The intent to forbid anything else was clear. And this, of course, extended to Pennsylvania as well. There's ample proof that these Sunday laws, which later became known in many states, by the way, as blue laws, were not a dead letter either. On October 6, 1636, John Barnes was found guilty of Sabbath breaking by a jury, fined 30 shillings, and made to sit in the stocks 1 hour. In 1639, Webb Aday was arraigned for working in his garden on Sunday. Before the year closed, he repeated the offense and was set in the stocks and whipped at the post. In 1651, Elizabeth Eddy was arrested for wringing out and wringing out clothes on the Lord's Day in time of service. Arthur Howland for not attending church. These examples are all from the Plymouth Colony Records, Volume 1. In 1621 through 2, Abraham Pierce, Henry Clark, and Thurston Clark Jr. were arrested for lazily spending Sunday and staying away from public service. In 1654 through 55, Peter Gaunt, Ralph Allen, Senator, and George Allen appeared to similar charges. Similar cases can be quoted from many pages from the colony's history in legal cases. Yet the myth persists that our ancestors who came here for Europe for freedom of religion would never have dared to compel anyone to go to church against his will. And all one needs to do to refute this is read history. That is, history which has not been rewritten by the Christian community. Okay, now I can close that window. All right. Now, my mouth is a little bit dry, and for some reason, I need to go to the restroom again. So let me get back to the studio, and I will also, in the process, regroup my notes, and we'll play another song here. Let me figure out which one it is that I'm going to play. All right, let me find it here. Okay. Let's give this one a try.
The movie will begin in 5 moments, the mindless voice announced. All those unseated will await the next show. As we seated and were darkened, the voice continued. The program for this evening is not new. You have seen this entertainment through and through. You've seen your birth, your life, and death. You might recall all of the rest. Did you have a good world when you died? Enough to base the movie on?
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, the Doors.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, now touch me, babe. Can't you see that I am not afraid? What was that promise that you made? Why won't you tell me what she said? What was that promise that you made?
Okay, I'm back. Well, I still got a long list here, and the show's down to a little over 38 minutes left. So I'm going to try to cram a bunch of stuff in here. I don't know how much more I can cram in. But I'm going to tell you what, though. I have a lot to say on this subject, and if I need to continue this next week, I will. I'm not going to go into the archives unless it's, you know, just like Final Thoughts or Music Tonight, because I got work I got to get done. And, you know, this wasn't me who brought this up in the first place. It was some other people who said some things. Plus, I've been wanting to get this off of my chest for a long time anyway. All right. Now, if you read the First Amendment regarding religion, it is blatantly clear that we have freedom of religion as well as freedom from religion. Okay? If you have a reading and comprehension problem, I would suggest that you find somebody who does not have a reading and comprehension problem to go over this with you and make it abundantly clear. Okay? Now, let me scratch that item off the list. Now, the Declaration of Independence. Oh, you Christians just love to say that your unalienable or inalienable rights come from God. Well, that's not what it says. It says from your Creator. Well, you just presume automatically that that meant Jehovah. Well, the writers of this document were Masons. All right? And it's abundantly clear, and I'll make it furtherly abundantly clear if I have to, they were not Christians. Okay? Your creator is your parents. And their creator was their parents. And so on and so forth. Your rights are inherited. Furthermore, they are unalienable or unalienable because you have no way of them not being. You know, I've heard this argument of free will. Anything that has consciousness has free will. All right. Now, if you guys want to go back to some period where everything is all good and there is no bad or anything like that, then you're going to have to go back to the state of being an animal where you do not know the difference between good and bad or good and evil or whatever the case may be, which is what most Christians want to do. In other words, you want to be fucking dumbass. Okay? Well, we don't need zombies. We already have enough zombies on this planet already. Okay? So, say goodbye to your religion, all right? Get a clue. Start learning some things. Now, the Founding Fathers were certainly Masonic. Oh, and one more thing I want to cover on this here. With the nature's God. Well, who is nature's God? Well, considering they were not Christians, nature's God is the Greek god Pan. And if you would like to know more about the Greek god Pan, I've just been informed through a message here by Kyle sent to me that the shows that I was describing to you earlier are now available on Renegade. If you want to listen to who Pan was, play my show on Satanism, and I play 2 10-minute pieces on a discussion of Pan. Then you will finally, if you're a Christian, figure out who nature's God is. After all this time and all of this psychobabble about God in the Declaration of Independence. Okay? Now, the Founding Fathers were the spiritual descendants of the Knights Templar, who were not Christian. How so? Through Freemasons. Now, Freemasonry descended from the Knights Templar in Scotland. Now, I am going to go through this more in depth at another point, but for the sake of brevity tonight, I'm going to read this short little take on an email that I sent out to my people on my list many, many times over the course of the last probably 11 or 12 years since 9/11, put it that way, because this stuff came out of an article on the numerology of 9/11. After the excavations were completed at the Temple Mount, the Knights returned to their native lands. Two of them ventured to Roslyn, Scotland, where they set up their headquarters. Shortly afterwards, the Knights were given the official seal of the Roman Catholic Church, and their number swelled as wealthy landowners and aristocrats joined their ranks. The Templars went on a binge of temple construction and brought back many sciences, such as astronomy, from the Holy Land. Their order grew in stature, wealth, and power quickly, and they won battle after battle against the Muslims during the various Crusades. And at some point, I will discuss some of the Crusades a bit. Their secret power was supposedly that they had possession of a piece of the true cross of the crucifixion of Christ, probably found at the Temple Mount excavations. This gave them powers over their enemies in battle, and they are said to have never lost a battle while in possession of the cross. I only read that part as a prelude here, okay? Let me cough just a second. They eventually lost the cross in the Battle of Hattin in 1187 to the Muslim Saladin. After marching on July 2nd, the Templars were surrounded and cut off from water supplies. On July 4th, they broke ranks in thirst and panic, abandoned the encampment and the cross, and were wiped out by Muslim forces. These 2 days later would become crucial, not only in Templar-inspired formation of the United States of America, but in the continuing hidden history of NASA as well. And I'm not even going to go into that, okay? And by the way, we had a discussion on the moon issue, Lou and I did, a few roundtables back. You'll have to look into that. Ultimately, despite the loss of the cross, the Templars apparently became a threat to the church itself. The Pope and the nearly broke King of France, Philip Le Bel, plotted to undermine the order and seize their considerable treasures in France. On Friday, October 13, 1307, the king's men moved against the knights and arrested many of them. This is why Friday the 13th is now considered unlucky. That's also probably why we had 13 colonies, okay? Although the papal conspiracy with King Philip succeeded in obtaining various confessions under torture and a considerable sum of Templar wealth, the conspirators never found the ultimate Templar treasure itself, which by now had been secreted away to Scotland. Even so, most of the order was wiped out in the October 13th raid. Their leader, Jacques de Molay, was burned at the stake, and his members scattered across Europe and beyond. Some went to Switzerland, some went to France. You know, it's hard to know where most of them went. The ones I just listed were chunks of them did go. In this case, stayed in France. Let's see, where was I at? On March 22nd, 1312, the church officially dissolved the order by papal bull. Surviving Germanic members formed the Teutonic Knights, and the Scottish members went underground, only to eventually reemerge as the Freemasons. Whatever ancient relics and treasures that the Templars held from their Jerusalem excavations, they were from this moment on secreted away beneath Roslyn Chapel in Scotland or somewhere, I believe, in Nova Scotia, Canada. And we'll have to discuss that perhaps in another point in time. I don't remember the name of the location there offhand. Secreted away beneath Roslyn Chapel in Scotland in much the same way these same artifacts were once buried in the Temple Mount itself. The chapel itself bears no resemblance to a Christian structure, as many experts who have surveyed it have verified. Remarkably, it is laid out along the same architectural lines as the dimensions given for the original Solomon's Temple that never actually existed. Herod's Temple was the only one that ever existed. Herod the Edomite, the Edomian. The Jews didn't even like him. What this brief history documents is that the founders of our nation, Washington, Franklin, Hancock, to name but just a few, were intimately connected with and philosophically descended from these original knights who fought against the Islamic forces in the Crusades over a half century before across the Middle East. They were, in fact, so enamored with the Templar rites and traditions, they made sure that our own Declaration of Independence was ratified on July 2nd, 1776, and signed on July 4th, 1776, dates of overwhelming significance to this older Templar order. Okay, now, I'm going to scroll back up here. Cough will run set. It has been said many times in our amongst us that the Freemasons were subverted. And again, at some point I'll discuss the Scottish Rite issue at another point. But it's a latecomer to all of this. This is what I'm fixing to read about has to do with the Freemasons prior to that time of the Scottish Rites coming to this country. I know most of you have a negative view of Jim Mars. I do too. However, every once in a while he does say something that's correct. In his book, Rule by Secrecy, published in the year 2000, pages 58, 59, quote, "The secret banking dynasty was begun by Mayor Amschel Bauer, a German Jew, on February 23, 1734, in Frankfurt. Young Mayer studied to become a rabbi. He was particularly schooled in Haskalah, a blending of religion, Hebrew law, and reason. The death of his parents forced Mayer to leave rabbinical school and become an apprentice at a banking house. Quickly learning the trade, he became court financial agent to William IX, royal administrator of the Hesse-Cassel region, and prominent Freemason. He ingratiated himself to William, who was only 1 year older than himself, by joining his interest in Freemasonry and antiquities. Mayer would search out ancient coins and sell them to his benefactor at greatly reduced prices. Considering his rabbinical training, coupled with his serious searches for antiquities, he surely developed a deep understanding of the ancient mysteries, particularly those of the Jewish Kabbalah. It was during this same period that the metaphysics of the Kabbalah began to fuse with the traditions of Freemasonry." Okay, now let me scroll back down on this same page that I'm on here. I read this once when Kyle interviewed me on the show on Satanism. This is at the time that Cornwallis surrendered to General George Washington. And this is what was told to him. "A holy war will now begin on America, and when it is ended, America will be supposedly the citadel of freedom, but her millions will unknowingly be loyal subjects to the crown. In less than 200 years, the whole nation will be working for divine world government. That government that they believe to be divine will be the British Empire. Your churches will be used to teach the Jews religion. And in less than 200 years, the whole nation will be working for divine world government. That government that they believe to be divine will be the British Empire. All religions will be permeated with Judaism without even being noticed by the masses, and they will all be under the invisible, all-seeing eye of the Grand Architect of Freemasonry." Now, if you are a Satanist, you understand that that symbol is not evil, and this whole thing has now been technically subverted. I will go into that at another time. Let me close this page. All right. Now let me light this cigarette that has gone out. Smoking on Sunday. And by the way, all these blue laws, we didn't get rid of all of them until here in Texas until the mid-80s. I mean, you couldn't even go to a department store on a Sunday. What the fuck? You know, that's how long this shit's lasted. And you still can't buy liquor, hard liquor, on a Sunday unless it's at a bar. And bars have closed like at 2 a.m., you know, and you can go to a bar on Sunday, however. It's the only place you can. And there was even, there's still places in Texas where after Prohibition, it was left up to the county to determine whether or not the county would allow consumption of alcohol at all. And that's how far this crap has gone. It's got to go. It's time to quit. Okay? There's still laws on the books saying you can't have this type of business or that type of business within a certain distance of a church. Well, fuck your churches, okay? I'm sick of it. You're going away. It's time. Bye-bye. You've had your chance. You fucked up. Adios. No mas. All right. So, now, back where I was at on my notes. Where's my pen? Okay. I discussed some of the Founding Fathers' issues. I mentioned Atlantis and Bacon, Masons, Templars, Cornwallis, Mars. Let's see here. Nature's God, inalienable. Oh, common law. Oh, there's this big claim that you Christians think that common law came from your fucking Bible. No, it didn't. It was reported in Rome that all of the European peoples already had the equivalent of common law. And if you look at the Vikings, they had a system of justice where they had trial by jury. None of this came from your stinking fucking Bible. So we don't need your fucking Bible. You got it? All right. Now, let's knock that off the list. Common law, system of justice, trial by jury. Now, if any of you still have any goddamn doubts about this, why don't you buy a book called Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital and discover just how much masonry is involved in all of the civic design and architectural design of the city of Washington, D.C. This was all well laid out by our Masonic forefathers. And, of course, George Washington was aware of the infiltration, as mentioned before, and he sought that, he suggested that most of the Masonic lodges come to an end if they were infiltrated with this. And I will get into at some point, after more research, a discussion on the anti-Masonic party. Now, also, there's a website called DC Symbols. Put it in a search engine. Go there. Look. Learn. Okay. Now, with that out of the way, many of these concepts and ideas of our founding fathers came from the mystery schools. All right? It's been a big, huge battle between secret societies, the mystery schools, and the church. Why do you think secret societies exist? To hide from the church so the information could be passed down from generation to generation. Okay? And all of the stuff goes back to at least the time of Cyrus the Great. Okay? He put a lot of this down in writing. He was one of the first people to do this. Many of our thoughts of freedom and Western civilization came from that time, from that point, and additionally to the Brotherhood of the Snake in ancient Babylon. Okay, now, let's see, where am I at? Okay, real quickly, I haven't forgotten the gun issues. I'm going to put those off. Okay, I can scratch that off my list here. All right, now, let's see here. All right, I discussed that as well. I will mention again, however, that I'm going to read in the future an essay called The Apotheosis of George Washington, which further will elucidate this issue. Now, also, too, I highly recommend that you research quotes by the founding fathers on Jews. Too bad they didn't bother to do a little bit more work in our Constitution to prevent them from doing what they have done. Now, let's see here. And also Bill Cooper, if we all remember who this man was. He did a long, extensive series of broadcasts on the Babylonian mystery religion. And one thing that he made abundantly clear, and I can't help but say it, the man claimed to be Christian, but I know good and goddamn well by the time he did his research, he figured out that Christianity was bullshit, but he would never have admitted to it. Plus, he would have been ridiculed in the patriot community had he done so. But he made a statement. It's all about religion. And yes, it is. It is all about religion. Okay? You Christians just don't get it, though. Now, one quick comment on the New Testament. You know, you all claim to say that Jesus spoke in parables. Well, what are parables? They're essentially an allegory, right? Okay? It's designed to teach you something by using an abstract concept. Well, why is it that if you understand that Jesus spoke in parables, you can't fucking figure out that he didn't literally make the blind see and he didn't literally walk on the fucking water? Jesus fucking Christ. Okay, now, I'm going to go ahead and take a quick break here, and I can probably tell you this. This is probably going to go into another show. My mouth is dry. I've just got to give my voice a rest because I've been yelling here. So that's just the way it goes. Let me get back to the studio, and let me figure out what song that I have not played yet that's up here on the board. And, all right, where'd it go? Here we go. Okay, I'm back. Every little bit of break that gives for my voice really is helpful. I've got a long list still of stuff that I can discuss. However, what I want to do here, before I go too far any further on anything, I want to say, you know, once your so-called religion has been proven to be bullshit, it is no longer a religion now, is it? Well, anyone who's done any research can pretty much prove that Judaism is bogus. And if Judaism is bogus, therefore Christianity and Islam is also bogus by default. All you have to do is prove one, and it destroys all three. Interesting trinity there, isn't it, by the way? I wonder how that worked out, right? I mean, like the cigarette. Now, if a religion is no longer a religion, then it's no longer afforded the First Amendment protection now, is it? Not as a religion. Freedom of speech, maybe? Well, yeah, I guess. But if you want to make it into a religion, then we are also protected freedom from religion in the same amendment, aren't we? So, you know, you can think whatever the hell you want, you can believe whatever the hell you want, but what I'm talking about here is how does this affect us in this movement? All right. Christianity is not going to be around very much longer. It is subsisting on gasps of air and sips of hope. And those are both running out very fast. So, what I've got next here, and I don't know whether or not I'll be able to get through this or not, but we'll see. I may go over a little bit. This, again, is from, God, I got two of them. I forgot about that. All right. It's two of them in one file here. Again, this is from Madeline Murray O'Hare about the rewriting of history of Christians. Single most thing that angers most people, like who are atheists or not Christian, that more than any other practice of Christianity is the insistence the religious community of Christians has on bending the facts of history to conform to its ideas and beliefs. And I'm going to give you one more example of how this is done. And when I say y'all, I mean any Christian who may hear this. Sherman Wakefield, who is married to Robert Ingersoll's granddaughter, has undertaken a study of some of the specific instances when such liberties have been taken with history itself. He became partially aroused at President Eisenhower at one point and wrote a short rebuttal to one of the president's activities. This is it. I quote with Sherman's permission. On Washington's birthday, President and Mrs. Eisenhower attended services in Christ Episcopal Church of Alexandria, Virginia, where George Washington was a vestryman and occupied pew number 60. The service was conducted by the Reverend Braxton Bragg Comer Lyle, the rector, who did not tell his congregation that Washington refused to take communion and walked out of the church before the communion service. When taken to task by the Reverend James Abercrombie of Philadelphia for this conduct, Washington stayed away from the church entirely on communion Sundays. However, according to tradition in the parish church, the Reverend Mr. Lyle read Washington's so-called prayer. Now, this prayer has been known to New Yorkers for some years, as it is inscribed on a bronze tablet adjoining the Washington pew in St. Paul's Chapel in that city. As a prayer, this is a forgery, as it was made up from a circular letter which General Washington addressed to the governors of the 13 states upon his disbanding the army, dated Newburgh, June 8, 1783. The prayer was manufactured from the last paragraph of Washington's letter by omitting words in the original and replacing them by words of divine petition. The letter was addressed to the respective governors of the states and not to God in the original. You was changed to thou in the prayer. The text of the prayer follows. with the additions, as I will note, this is the prayer. I don't know whether to read this or not because it's so screwed up. Without seeing it, you may not get it. So, anyway, I'll read it anyway. Almighty God, we make our earnest prayer that thou wilt keep these United States in thy holy protection, that thou wilt incline the hearts of the citizens to cultivate a spirit of subordination and obedience to government, to maintain a brotherly affection and love for one another and for their fellow citizens of the United States at large. And finally, that thou wilt most graciously be pleased to dispose all to do justice, to love mercy, and to demean ourselves with that charity, humility, and pacific temper of mind, which were the characteristics of the divine author of our blessed religion, and without an humble limitation of whose example these things we can never hope to be a happy nation. Grant our sublimation, we beseech thee, through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Okay, so you can kind of figure out what was added to that, okay? That is just how blatant sometimes these people are. And when I say rewriting, I mean literally rewriting here, okay? So, anyway, let me scroll on down and see what the next one is. I'm not going to read all of that one. Alrighty. I don't look at the clock here. We're not going to make it, are we? This 2 hours just flew by. I didn't even bother to look in the chat room, so many people are here listening tonight. All right, I'll get into this. If it goes over, it goes over a little bit, all right? The Christianity of our founding as a nation. We hear constantly the United States is a Christian nation and that it was founded on the principle of Christianity. Of course, historically, this is just not true. The founders of our nation were so fed up on Christianity that they repudiated it over and over again. Why were they fed up? Let me read you a little about the tolerant Christians who founded our first states while we were still tied to England as our mother nation, and see if you don't immediately perceive why our founding fathers wanted no part of this intolerance and hypocrisy. Let us look at the laws of the Lord and the laws of the land, state by state, in these colonial times. I don't know if we're going to be able to do that. We don't have enough time. We can begin with the great mother state, Virginia, and cite for you the laws, divine, moral, and martial, decreed by Governor Thomas Dale in that state, 1612. I'll read this one. Here we go. 1. To speak impiously of the Trinity or one of the divine persons or against the known article of Christian faith was punishable with death. Did you hear that? Was punishable with death. Now, in Islam, they what? Cut your hand off? Okay. Hope that sinks in, people. Okay. This means that as a Unitarian, as we know them now, or a Jew or a Buddhist or a Muslim, could be punished with death for professing those faiths in Virginia. But let me go on and finish this series of laws. 2. To avenge blaspheming God's holy name, the punishment was death. 3. To curse or ban. For the first offense, some severe punishment in relation to local customs. For the second, a bodkin, this is a knife, by the way, should be thrust through the tongue. If the culprit offended the third time by swearing, this was punishable by death. These people are fucking nuts. And that's what this country was founded on? Really? Well, thank goodness for the founding fathers. Where would we be without them? I think we have a significant gratitude to these people who saved us from the church. My God. 3. To curse or ban for the first offense some severe... Okay, I read that one. 4. To say or do anything to the derision or despite of God's holy word, or to say or do anything in disrespect to any minister, the guilty party was openly whipped 3 times, and to ask public forgiveness in the assembly of congregation 3 several Sabbath days, D-A-I-E-S. Number 5, non-attendance at church or religious services entailed a penalty. For the first offense, the stoppage of allowance. For the second offense, a whipping. For the third, the galleys or jail for 6 months. 6 months. Number 6, if anyone broke the Sabbath, and we have the remnants of this in our present blue laws, the first offense brought the stoppage of allowance, the second whipping, and the third death. These fucking people didn't play around, did they? Number 7, every person in the colony or every person who came into it was required to repair to the minister of the church for examination in the faith. If his religious education was unsound, he was to be instructed. If he refused to go, the minister for his examination, he was to be whipped. If he refused a second time, he should be whipped twice and compelled to acknowledge his fault on the Sabbath day in the assembly of the congregation. And if he refused a third time for that third refusal, he was to be whipped every day until he makes the acknowledgement. God damn, man. Shit. Fines were imposed for non-attendance at church, payment of tithes, 10% of one's income, and equivalent to surtax we now have on our income taxes, was made compulsory for all. And a first lien was put on every resident's tobacco to make certain he paid his tithe. All parish churches were built by local taxation. Really? Now, wouldn't you be glad to know all your taxation, taxes, all of your local tax money went to build churches? Puritan clergy were banned from the state or forced to attend Anglican services. Quakers were fined, imprisoned, or banished. Roman Catholics were disqualified from public office, and any priest who dared to come to Virginia was subject to instant expulsion from the state. Anyone who did not present an infant child for baptism was penalized by a fine or other penalty. How does all that grab you? Yeah. Now, you give these people an inch, you're going to take a mile. That says it all, okay? If you let any Christian form of theocracy enter your form of government, one thing leads to another, and you are going to see nothing but a severe progression of tyranny. So, I will have to continue this at a later point. So, I'm going to go ahead and close out the way I normally do. And if you didn't listen to my astrology shows, which I know a bunch of you didn't pay any attention to those whatsoever, okay, that's your prerogative. So again, what happens if we don't prevail over these tyrants? The truth is hate, only to those who hate the truth. A noble society is not ruled by might, but by law. Preserving your culture isn't hate. It's about survival. You do not have the right to never be offended. The fact that they want your guns is all the more reason to have them. There are no illegal guns, only illegal gun laws. Anti-gun is anti-white. Anti-Semitism is a disease. You catch it from Jews. Free men aren't equal, and equal men aren't free. Distinct peoples have a right to remain distinct. Multiracialism is not self-government. Forced association isn't freedom. And if you worship your enemy, you are defeated. If you adopt your enemy's religion, you are enslaved. If you breed with your enemy, you are destroyed. 1488. So until next time, Hail Satan, and we will go out with a song from Heart.